I'm in love with him and I feel fine.
Jeb, are you all right?
Yeah.
Oh,
Yeah.
no, I get what. Oh, I've been where you are, Jeb. Are you going to be all right, mate? You let it
Think
out.
so.
It's tricky stuff, isn't it? It's a sad, sad day. Should we do a podcast? That'll take your mind off it. Come on. Come
Okay.
on.
Hello there, friends, and welcome back to another episode of Football Manager Therapy. I am your host, Rich Owens, and joining me this week for the first time in a long time, we've got the full FM team with us. Kev is here, Jeb is here, Callum is here, everybody is here, and I'm really excited. Kev, how are you doing, buddy?
How long have you got? Hello, everybody. It's good to see you. Yeah, I'm doing all right. I'm here. It's a lovely thing to be is here. And we'll delve into the rest of it as we go. But yeah, I'm all right. Thank you, mate. It's good to see you all.
Good. It's lovely to have you back. And an excellent hat you're wearing today. Another excellent hat. Just a wonderful addition to your
Thanks.
Head. It's nice, isn't it? Jeb, how are you doing, pal?
Obviously, rather sad and tragic news. But there we are. We'll get over it. Other than that, yeah, all right. Tired. Slightly, you know, just Jeb. I'm on a scale of one to Jeb. I'm Jeb. There you go.
Good. It's almost like there's a massive glowing sign behind your head that's kind of confirming that for us.
Exactly.
And it's your own fault you're tired. You stayed up late watching the telly. So
yeah, exactly.
It's all on you. It's all on you. Another returning friend. Hi, Callum. How are you, buddy? Missed you.
On a scale of one to Jeb, as usual, as to form, I'm about a one, I think. I'm on the other side of the Jeb scale. that's our dynamic. That's how it works. No, I'm good. It's been a prolonged period. I seem to come back every full moon, I think. I think that needs to be checked out. But no, I'm good, thanks. How are you, Rich?
Oh, I'm absolutely fine. Thank you. I'm just excited that all my pals are here on a Sunday morning. It's very exciting for me. We're going to get you a silver bullet, Callum, and we're going to just see if that has any impact on
that
your
seems
life
fair.
Whatsoever.
Yeah.
I think
that might have an impact. Just, you know, it depends what we do with it, though. You know,
yeah.
It might extend the period that Callum's off the podcast for.
Possibly.
Maybe. Yeah.
It's really weird. He's definitely not a werewolf. Do werewolves end up in A&E when they get one of those?
Don't talk to me about A&E.
Oh, dearie me. I know. Just you need to remember to get your A&E card stamped. That's all I'm saying, because then you get one free A&E after 10 goes. That's the way the NHS works, as is my understanding of the situation. I watch the news, but I watch it with the sound off. So that's about all I've got. I think that we've kind of just touched upon a couple of bits and pieces there, really, haven't we, fellas? We have got loads to talk about today. As we've said, Jeb has a tragedy that we're going to work through together. The name of the podcast is Football Manager Therapy for a reason. We're going to help you through it, Jeb. But before we do, I know I've asked you both, Kev and Callum, mm-hmm. you know, how's it going? How are we? But genuinely, I think... how are you actually? Because I think you've both had a lot going on recently in very, very different capacities. Kev, I mean, you know, you've had a bit of a chat about it online. You know, you've been very upfront about kind of what's been going on with you recently, mate. But how are you, man?
Up until a couple of days ago, there was a point this week where I genuinely, for about 3 days, had no idea which day it was. Because things were just so weird and chaotic and bizarre. In broad strokes, I am doing absolutely okay. I am, you know. But it has been a three-week period that has been really, really tricky. So, yeah, in broad strokes, I am doing fine. Would you like me to recount my 3 weeks in as succinct way as possible? Because it's quite something. Okay, so the first thing you need to know in the lead up to my last 3 weeks is that my wife had got a facial problem where she was carrying a lot of tension through her jaw through stress and grinding her teeth at night, and it was causing some facial issues. And she'd seen a dentist about it, but that was kind of the diagnosis. So that was the first thing that was going on a bit before the 3 weeks. We're recording on a Sunday morning, and we are going back 3 weeks last Friday, okay? So that's where we are. On the Friday, I got a phone call from my mum to say, and I knew she wasn't, to say that she wasn't feeling particularly well in a number of ways. She's got Parkinson's already. It's always a bit tricky. And she needed to go to A&E because she was deteriorating considerably. So I took her up to A&E to sort out a few issues. They kind of did, sort of. They didn't really reset her as much as I'd like them to, but they did a good enough job just to appease her mind a little bit. And we, after 8 hours in A&E overnight, we basically came home and settled her back in again, and off we went. On the Sunday, we recorded a podcast. And about 10 minutes before the podcast started, my wife ran into the room, said she just had a phone call from her brother, and her mum was having an ambulance called on her because she was having chest and arm pains, and so she needed to go off to the hospital. She ran out the door before I could process that. And we recorded a podcast because I was here and I couldn't do anything. By the end of the podcast, I'd received a message from my sister saying that my mother had had an ambulance called on her because she was deteriorating from when I was with her on the Friday evening. So both mothers were in ambulances on their way to A&E potentially. Now, both of them were actually cancelled. My wife took my mother-in-law up to A&E herself. And in the end, my mum was seen by a local doctor that was on call. So it was, again, a bit of an appeasing job. My mum was resettled, reset, and we were fine, sort of, although she wasn't in a great place. My mother-in-law, chest and arm pains were nothing related to heart. They were related to stress and heart and blood pressure and all that kind of stuff. And so she was reset and went back home. On the Monday, I spoke to my mum and she sounded dreadful. I mean, you just get that feeling sometimes when you speak to somebody and they've just gone and you know that they're in a really bad way. My wife was at work. I asked her on the way through, go and check on my mum, see how she was doing. So she did that and immediately called an ambulance and told me she was being rushed to A&E because she'd gone really downhill over the last couple of the last day or so. So I went and spent another night of in A&E with my mum sorting that out. And she was admitted to hospital with a procedure that she needed to go through to figure out some of her stuff. She then went through two procedures back to back because it re-emerged after having done the first one. And then eventually she came out middle of this last week. So she was in hospital for over 2 weeks and probably earlier than she needed to. I think she should have stayed in a little while longer. So that was my mum. She's now fine-ish, but frail and has Parkinson's already. And so things are challenging. So she's now been reset, but that was happening over the last 2 weeks. So that was the Monday. On the Thursday, my wife, who had had this tension in her mouth, was climbing the walls. And when you're living with somebody that's literally kind of climbing the walls through pain, you know something's gone on. And so we took her to the doctor. She got some painkillers and other bits and pieces, but they didn't touch anything and upset a couple of other issues she's got. And in the end, that day, we took her for a second dentist opinion because we thought something else was going on, and it was. The same prognosis of stress and all that stuff is still there. She's also got an absolutely raging tooth infection underneath a tooth on the right-hand side that wasn't spotted by the previous dentist. And it's now making her literally climb the walls. So she was given antibiotics for that and told to go and take them over the 7-day period and hopefully it will settle down and then go and do some other things with this new dentist that will enable her to sort some of her facial issues out. So that was the Thursday. By the Friday evening, my younger brother took himself into A&E. He's got similar disability issues to me, and they were causing him a number of problems. But he was in and out and did what he needed to do and was reset and was fine. On the Sunday, having spent 4 days taking antibiotics, my wife was not getting any better. In fact, it was getting a lot worse. And on the Sunday evening, she was just so bad. So we got in the car and took her back down to A&E to see somebody about something, basically, to see what we could get done. We thought it was best if I drop her at the door of the A&E and then go and park the car so she could get signed in and all that kind of stuff. I did that, got back to A&E within 5 minutes, and my wife was nowhere to be seen because my wife had passed out in the middle of the waiting room at the A&E and had been taken out round back to one of their booths so she could be settled in a better place. So she was in a bad way. Ultimately, it turned into... the antibiotics are working. We have scanned you and x-rayed and done everything we need to do, and they are working. You're just going to have to continue to take them. Yes, the next 48 hours are going to be tricky. Keep that next 48 hours in mind, are going to be tricky, but you're going to have to take the antibiotics and then probably have another set as well. So go do that and we'll see where we are. That was the Sunday. On the Monday, my mother-in-law's chest pains and arm pains came back in a roaring way and absolutely knocked her for six. And so she needed to go back to see the doctor. So in the end, myself and my missus, who I had to drag out to do it, kind of, because that's who my mother-in-law wanted, we went back to up to A&E and spent another 6 hours with my mother-in-law up there, reset her. Got some new stuff for her to cope with what she's going through and other bits and pieces to reset her in a better way, and seemingly sorted that out. On the Tuesday, my brother-in-law rang my wife to say, I've just dropped the paper in to Dad. And he was on the floor upstairs having had a fall, and I'm having to call an ambulance. He looks in a bad way. We can't get him up off the floor, so an ambulance is coming. So I drove my wife back over to my parents-in-law, and the ambulance was already there by the time we got there. And he was carted off to A&E, went through a whole process, and by the end of the day had deteriorated really big time because he had had a stroke. On top of being 91 and having dementia, it wasn't a great place for him to be in that sense. Over the next few days, he continued to deteriorate at the same point that my mum was beginning to improve and potentially come out of hospital. By the weekend, we knew that he was on end of life care because he had deteriorated so much through the stroke and through this stuff that he'd already had. They were called in as a family on the Sunday evening of last week to go and spend the last moments with him. And the stubborn old what's it hang on till Tuesday, because that's what he would have done. He was such a lovely guy, but he did pass away on Tuesday of his stroke and the issues that were caused by that. Since then, of course, you then kind of change your trajectory a little bit, and there's lots to do, and there's lots of admin-y things, but also lots of processing and emotional stuff, and family members gathering for lots of different reasons. And that's the process that we're currently going through. We've got a couple of weeks before the funeral, and there is an awful lot to do. Within the space of 3 weeks, that's a lot. And so to be honest with you, I genuinely meant it when I said earlier this week, there were two or three days I had no idea what day it was. I just had to go on day by day and do what I was asked to do in the way that I was asked to do it. Now, as a way to conclude this part for me, I will tell you that I have either a very healthy or unhealthy way of processing these sorts of things. And everybody's going to have a different opinion on what that looks like. But for me personally, the minute that somebody dies, even a loved one, and I went through this with my own dad a few years ago, I have a conscious decision that I make that I am not going to mourn them. I am going to celebrate them and what they were and how they did it. It just works for me. So there are no tears for me particularly. I have missed my dad for the last 6-7 years, whatever it's been. He was an amazing person and somebody I love dearly. But I didn't feel the need to mourn. I felt the need to celebrate, and I will do that for my father-in-law. He was lovely and he welcomed me into his family, and I'm forever grateful for that. But he was diminishing at the age of 91, and this is not a terrible thing in the sense of being able to free up my mother-in-law a little bit from the responsibility of caring for him and other things. So there are reasons why I am absolutely fine. Not necessarily say the same thing about some of the other family members around, and that is absolutely fine, but that is now my role. I support, and I enable them to be what they need to be, and we do the things that we need to do. So yeah, it's tricky, but mental health is tricky because there's lots of stuff that come up against you at all sorts of different places and times, and there's never a good moment for these things, and it always catches you by surprise, and it's, you know, all that kind of stuff. And it's meant that my streaming hasn't been there, which sounds like a little bit of a flippant, well, of course it hasn't, it's streaming, for goodness sake, yes, but it's really important to who I am and what my mental health is and other things, and that's been a little bit of a miss as well in amongst some times where it's right for me not to. But I'm looking forward to getting back to that and, you know, getting back to my habit systems that keep my mental health on an even keel and all that kind of stuff. So it's been tough. I think there's going to be some tough days to come of processing and, you know, stuff for some people around me. But ultimately, I am doing all right. And I've had an awful lot of care sent my way over the last couple of weeks from people around the community and lots of different places. So I'm very appreciative of that. So yeah, that's me really. It's been weird. It's been really weird in a lot of ways. And I don't want to repeat it again anytime soon, but I'm doing all right.
Good. So apart from all of that, everything else is okay, though.
I think so.
Okay, good. Oh, I'm Kev. I'm so sorry, mate. I'm so sorry. Like we've kind of been. You've as all of this has been happening, as I said earlier, you've been very kind of open about what's been happening. Mm-hmm. We've been kind of, you know, watching this happen from a distance, and you have such a positive, objective approach to it. It's quite incredible. I mean, we said this, say, just before we hit record, and when it was just the two of us having a quick catch up, I said if I was going through some kind of bereavement, I would want a Kev around me. You know, that's what I would need. And what an absolutely rotten run of weeks, just for it to, any of those things happening individually would be awful. Mm-hmm. And to have them all happen so quickly is just the worst. So I'm glad you're all right.
Thank you.
And as we say in all of our correspondence with you, we are always here.
Indeed.
You know and where we are.
Absolutely.
Exactly. And what it's been genuinely lovely as well, as I say, because you've been very open about it, which is a wonderful thing to be. Like there's clearly a lot of people out there in the wider kind of FM community and the wider spectrum of the internet, I suppose, that are invested in your well-being and care. And that's a really, really nice thing to see. The way that people have opened up has been ever so nice. You know, I had similar set of circumstances myself when I lost my dad a few years ago. Mm-hmm. Everybody was lovely. And, you know, streaming was a really, really important part of my routine in the weeks after that, because it's just something that you can do that you enjoy, and it's, you know, you can use it as saying to take your mind off things, and you know, there's supportive people out there that want to talk to you and just genuinely want to know how you're doing.
Yeah.
And it's a wonderful thing. So I'm glad to hear that you're doing all right, mate.
Yeah.
And that's good. Good.
Good.
I mean, I'm fine. Jeb's been all right. Callum, how are you, bud? I mean, you know, again, different circumstances, but, you know, not necessarily the easiest run of late.
I'm just blown away by Kev, to be honest with you. I admire your attitude on it so much, mate. I really do. Like, I think that other people in your situation will be on the floor. Like, you know, for that amount of things to happen in such a short space of time. So
you know why I'm not, don't you? The reason that I'm not is because I'd never blooming get back up again. Sorry.
But that's once again, like, you know, being able to put a positive spin on things, bit of humour in there is genuinely admirable. You're an amazing man. And it's really, really impressive. I don't really want to talk about the fact that I've had COVID and my baby's a little bit poorly now, to be honest. It doesn't really, it feels like a mountain and a molehill in comparison. But yeah, no, fatherhood's tough. I think people, everyone who's been through it, it's an illness that many, many men face during their life, fatherhood. It's something I've always, always wanted to do. I genuinely felt like I was put on this earth to be a dad. And now I am a dad. I realized that most of the stuff I thought before was wrong, and I am in way over my head. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm making mistakes daily. All I know is I love her to bits. She is the best thing that's ever happened to me. However, it's really hard. It's really hard. Like, you know, she's 3 months old now. She dominates everything as she should do, and I'm sure she will do for the rest of my life. And you know, that's something I'm adjusting to. But the first 2 months in particular were incredibly difficult for myself and my wife. Like, it was hard going. She had colic, which is something I haven't experienced before. But for people who don't know, it basically means they're in pain most of the time. And so that's really, really hard when you've got this small, adorable little baby who's basically screaming for most of the day. But the last month, I can hear her crying right now, which is good. The last month has been a lot more positive. Unfortunately, last week I got COVID. So fatherhood's quite hard on its own. When you're ill, looking after a 3-month-old is tough as well.
Excuse my dog. Apologies.
No problem. Always nice to hear a dog. But yeah, I don't know. As I say, I don't want to talk too much because I feel like... I feel like I really have a beef-free moment.
No. Okay, I'm going to put a stop to that one because this is what I do. I have lived with a disability all my life, and everybody tells me, oh, my things are never as bad as your things and the blah, blah, blah. It's complete and utter bunkum. It really is, because everybody has things to process and deal with. And you don't have the same things as I am to balance what is good and bad for you. This is your circumstance. This is your truth. This is the way it is. And you have to be able to express that. Absolutely. I've got no issue with that whatsoever. I would not want COVID. I've never had it. Don't want it. I'm not sure I could cope with a colic-ridden child either. So you go for it, my friend.
I mean, I must admit, something as I've got older, I think I've been really ignorant like growing up. And I think it's only sort of in the last few years where coming to terms with the fact that everyone's got something going on. Like, when you always feel, oh, well, this is happening and this is happening to me. What you've got to understand is every single person in the world, if you speak to them, they've probably got something to complain about or something, even if it's something small. And I think learning that is really important because, you know, it's good to listen and it's good to talk as well.
It's the double checking that's really important. So when you ask somebody if they're all right, ask them again.
Sometimes
they might just go, yeah, I'm fine.
They always will, won't they? Yeah. They always will. That's the default. That's what we do. We're programmed to not show emotion. I especially think as men as well, I think you're supposed to be quite hardened and you're the supporter. Like Kev talking about before, you're so often the supporter, aren't you? And then you do sort of go to who's supporting the supporter in a lot of circumstances. So it is really important to talk. Good Lord, we've got really deep, haven't we? This is a Football Manager podcast.
That's cool. And it's the reason why, you know, we are going to ask again whether Rich and Jeb are actually okay, because Rich flippantly went, we're all fine, it's fine, let's deal with everybody else. But it's important to revisit and go back round and say, whatever it is that's not okay, it's okay for that not to be okay. Are you okay?
I mean, from my point of view, and again, it sounds like I'm being dismissive now. After that, it's genuinely I am good.
Excellent.
I am good. It's lovely. It's really, really, really nice. You know, in terms of let's be honest, it wasn't that long ago that my mental health was in an absolutely awful place. And that it feels like it was a long time ago, which can only be a good thing. I think, things are good. I mean, ironically, it feels like it wasn't that long ago that mental health struggling, but it feels like 5 minutes ago that I was exactly where you're sat, Callum. You know, just two, you know, young kids. It's hard. Being awake a lot is difficult. Like, there's so much. There's just so much, and it never ends. In the nicest possible way, but it's different challenges, it's different things, and it's, you know, as they get older, the challenges remain, and it's again being objective about how you cope with it. I love it what it is that you say when you say you felt like you were put on this earth to be a dad. It's such a wonderful way of looking at things. And, you know, you will need that positive attitude. My goodness, you will need that positive attitude. Facebook reminded my wife and I last week, about 6 years ago, when my son would have been, yeah, he was about two, and he was potty training. And I don't know if you've ever tried to give medicine to a child. You know, when you buy Calpol for kids, you get like a little syringe and you give them a syringe full of medicine. My potty training son got hold of a Calpol syringe and a potty that he just used. And I tell you what's fun to put in a syringe and spray around the house. Yeah. And not even just delicately as well. Like we walked in on him in a room with a syringe full and then just like into the back of the syringe, all up a wall. And we're like, oh, what's that? Oh, buddy, no. And you know, you're like, oh, do you remember when he just used to cry a little bit? You're like, oh, take us back. to some the world's most disgusting super soaker, you know. That's but different challenges. It's different approaches to things, you know. It's oh, but no, I've been there, and you have my sympathy. Is not the right word, but I've been there, and I understand. And yeah, it's difficult, but you guys are going to be okay. It's a horrible thing to, you know, it might not seem like this, it's the most instant thing, but it's going to, you know, this, as you say yourself, objectively, things are getting easier and it will continue to do so.
Just and she's having a lovely time expressing herself.
She's expressing herself. You know, don't let her near Calpol syringes would be my advice.
That one is noted now. Yeah.
The only parenting advice I have to give in any context, just don't let them near Calpol syringes. That and you'll probably be okay.
Don't start a parenting podcast.
I go the other way. Please do that. That would be amazing.
One of my favorite podcasts at the moment, and nobody that is listening to this, there'll be no crossover, but it's called Mike and Vittorio's Guide to Parenting, and they're two Irish comedians. Neither of them have children, and parenting doesn't come up in any context on the podcast, but I just think it's really, really, really nice. So yeah, feel free to check out Mike and Vittorio's Guide to Parenting. Very, very, very good podcast, and I can't start my own rival one because they're better. There we go. Jeb, how are you genuinely doing, mate? Are the things good in your world?
Getting better. I mean, I've not mentally, I've like, you know, like fuzzy days in the head. And you just don't know why. You just have down days and things like that. I think there was a couple of Mondays ago. I woke up in the morning. I've got a couple of friends and stuff like that, and everyone was putting, oh, we've all had fun Christmases. What's your weight this time? It was a weight last year, so I went to weigh myself. I'm the heaviest I've ever been in my entire life. Almost as soon as I weighed myself, I got a text message like, oh, do you want to play five-a-side tonight? I was like, yeah, sure, let's go for it. And then I realized I'd not played five-a-side for 5 years. And also, it was the coldest. No, that day when it was like -5. Yeah, that was the day I decided to go play five-a-side. I went into my boot bag. I found three pairs of socks in there that I forgot I had, a bottle of Lucozade, vintage.
Wow. It's corked, though. Can't drink it.
I remember boots as well. Actually, the first week, I was all right. Ran around a bit. I was fine. Awful first touch for always. I had that. Silly things like that. And then this week, I went back. And this week, it was the wind that joined in. It was actually colder this week than it was the week before because of the wind. Almost immediately, I pulled my thigh. Then I stubbed my toe, so I've got a massive bruise on the end of my toe, and then somebody went into my ankle on a tackle. But I did all right. I got a couple of assists in it, and then I also did a back heel assist, which was just like, I don't know how I just done that. It worked out really well.
Impressive.
But yeah, it turns out the reason I stubbed my toe is because my boots are 15 years old, and I'd stamped my foot down that hard that the stud had come up and like just bruised into my toe. So I've now bought some new boots to play again for the next one. So it's quite nice that I've now got a regular like Monday night activity that we're going to go down and do five-a-side down there. But yeah, I'm now going to show up tomorrow. And because I'm quite loyal to wearing like Nike stuff, I bought some Nike boots. I've got some bright red boots that I'm going to show up in tomorrow. I don't know if that just puts a target on my back. But wow. Other than that, I've been up and down to work. I've been obviously tiredness is always an issue with me generally because I'm a rubbish sleeper. But yeah, I think it's quite nice to watch Laurie, my other half. She's been on the really good, like, positive mental health journey. So she does a journal every night. She goes to bed. She does everything I should be doing. So it's quite nice to see. So it's picking up little things from there. So it's where I can go with that. And I think that's what's been really lovely. I think it was Friday. There was a couple of times where I was streaming and I was like, I think I said to all you guys, oh, nobody's chatting in my stream. It's getting really frustrating and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And it was after the podcast last week when Rich went, you do know that your chat's on subscriber only mode. I went, nope. So Rich was just coming into my stream, just making noises and then saying nothing. He was just kept on doing all the noise commands. And that was it.
It's all I can do.
It's amazing. I turn that off and then people are just chatting away. I was like, oh, it's not that bad. People don't dislike me. So.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it made a hell of a difference.
I would imagine. Yeah.
I'm not sure. I don't know if I clicked it off. Like one of my mods had clicked it. Literally, I'd sit there. I was like, cool. Oh, just a 3-hour stream and somebody said like 4 words and that's about it.
I assumed you'd done it when you blocked me from your chat last network game. I assumed it was then. So I'm in a really awkward position at the moment where my phone has decided to add an old payment, an old bank card that I had years and years and years ago, and decided it's the default bank card for all of my online transactions, which includes, unfortunately, all of my Twitch subs. So I've had to cancel all of my subs on Twitch and wait for them until it properly expire, which doesn't actually happen for another 3 or 4 days. I think there's another couple that I've got to wait until the beginning of February for before I can remove that payment option, add my actual card back on, and then I can start giving people that I like subs again. And I was like, I can't communicate with Jed. It won't let me resub, so I could be like, you've got sub-only chat on. So I was like, I'll just go in there and I'll just make it go newt-newt every few seconds. And I'll try and Morse code it. that was a nice moment. Oh, that was a pleasant moment. Can we just touch on the red boots, by the way? Because you've got one back heel assist, does that
Is outrageous.
Well, that's
bold.
They were the cheapest boots on the Nike website, so that's what I went for. But they were red. Yeah, I will take a picture of them and post them. And then,
they got laces though?
Yeah, they've got laces. I think. Okay. Actually, I've not even checked. Fine. I don't even check the fit, but I just turn up tomorrow.
I never thought Jeb would have 20 flair. I mean, I'm sure, 20 aggression maybe, but 20 flair, I never saw that coming.
Tries tricks often. That's
I've also got a little bit of Mickey Quinn about me where I've got like 16 acceleration but 2 pace. So I can start off really fast. So is he running in slow motion? No. That's the speed he's going.
Look, we all know that the first 5 yards are in your head. That's all there is to it.
That's where they're going to remain for me, I'm telling you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Look, Jan Molby made a career as a professional footballer not running. And
this is true.
Speaks to me on a deeply personal level. I think that's wonderful.
And then something that was quite nice on Friday was Laurie had gone to a friend. She had a sleepover. She's late 30s, early 40s. She's 40. She went for a sleepover at a friend's house because, cool.
Nice.
So I was left at home alone with the cats. Mimi is, she's 16 years old. She's got all sorts. She's deaf. She's partially blind. She has trouble eating because she's got no teeth and stuff like that. She sits on the couch all day. She'll sit on various things on the couch. You've probably seen all the various cushions and silly things that she has. On Friday, she decided, I am going around the house wherever I want. She can barely meow. She'll just go... She would just follow me around, just shouting at me all day, all night. I fed her some food, and she does this regularly. It's horrible. She's like 2 kilos or 2.5 kilos, and Cash is like nearly 5.5 kilos. So that's a size difference. But Mimi will put away 4 to 5 packets of food a day, like quite easily. But one of the problems that she eats that fast. I think it might just be a thing where the old house, she had to get in and get all the food before anyone else stole it. She eats food that fast, you'll just throw it up and then just carry on eating it. It's just like
repeated.
So she did that, and I was like, oh, no, Mimi. And then she just turned around, she just left it, and then she's like, bah, bah. And then she's just like, I'm going to bed now. Like, instead of going on the couch, she's like, I'm going up to your bed, and we're going to go sleep in that bed. Okay. Fine. So, yeah, that was like, it was really lovely. And then she was just following me around the house yesterday as well. I was like, nice. So, it's a nice little development thing. Pets are really important. I think that's something as well. Like that serotonin blast when you just stroke a pet, give it a little ruffle. It's like, ah, yeah. Like I sent the picture of Cash to you guys this morning. He was just lying on the bed. It's like, I can't leave him like that.
Yep. You're physically not allowed to.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you can't.
He's showing the belly. He's got the little rabbit paws out. He's got to have that rub on the belly. So
The rules of cat. It's just how it works. I've got a speed eating vomiter as well. It's just minging, absolutely minging. It's it is one of my cats, by the way. Not one of the kids. My goodness, if eating slowly was a competitive sport, I'm entering. My son's bringing home the gold in the Olympics. Honestly, it's watching him eat gives me anxiety. Like, how do you, he perches like a little goblin on a chair. Like, he won't actually sit. He perches and then just very, very slowly eats. And I'm like, what are you doing? Just eat normal. Eat like a regular human being, please. But then one of our cats is, gobbles it down, voms it up, then runs around shouting at you because he's hungry inexplicably. What are the chances?
My favourite part is just Cash just staring at her do this. It's like, what the hell's just happened there? <That's>... It's like, are you going to sort that out? I was like... I guess so, yeah, we could do.
No, you're doing it wrong. Stop doing cat wrong.
Anyway, is there a game we can talk about?
No, probably not. I mean,
we had a family game of Monopoly over Christmas.
That's it. I mean, my kids were over Christmas. My kids became obsessed with the Mr. Hankey, the Christmas Poo song.
Well, of course, why wouldn't
because my wife put it on Spotify, and it's now their favorite thing in the world. So I'm playing the Stick of Truth again because Mr. Hankey pops up in it just so I can be like, look, kids, Mr. Hankey. It's like, oh, can we watch this bit? No, you can't. No, you absolutely can't.
I don't know if you're familiar with there's a puzzle game called Superliminal. Laura was like one day, oh, let's play a game together. So I put Superliminal on. 10 minutes in, she was asleep, and I completed it on my own in 2.5 hours. Yay, we completed the game together.
Yeah. We did it. Wake up. We did it. Yeah. Well done. You were integral. You were so integral to this. I mean, there is a game we could talk about, I suppose, in a roundabout kind of way. But before we talk about it, I think there is one other thing I think we do need to talk about, because there has been, we've all done a little catch up as to how we are, but there's one very important thing Jeb kind of hasn't brought up. Yes. I suppose there's commiserations for your loss, mate. I'm so sorry to hear that's happening.
I was in a work meeting when it happened, and the annoying thing was, I was in a work meeting with people who just don't care about football. So I was just like, everyone's just like, why is your face dropped? I was like, No, it's really difficult. It's unexpected, but unexpected. He was always going to leave this year, but then he extended for another 2 years. And you can understand his reasoning why, which is just, I'm knackered. And I was like, yeah, you watch him on the sidelines, passion running up and down, does all the things. He's pulled his hamstring. He's like got so angry before and various other things.
And just so you know, we're talking about Troy Deeney leaving Forest Green Rovers.
Yeah, exactly. By the way. It's 31 days. 31 days of just pure anger.
It's hard work.
It's a lot. It's a lot.
But yeah, honestly, like, there's hatred from pretty much every other team that doesn't have Jurgen Klopp as a manager. I mean, there's some people that respect him and well done to them. Some people just really dislike him. for the audio listeners, I'm looking at Callum. Right, but yeah, no, he's like I said, he's infectious. He's brought a city, a supporter like group together more than anything else. And I don't think like there's many negative words to say about him on my side of things. I mean, people say he moans and things like that, but he just wants to win. He wants to win things. And I think this season we could win 4 trophies, we could win none, but I don't think it'll matter either way. I think he'll still go down in those icon status with Shankly, Paisley, Dalglish, and things like that. I think he'll always have that place. And I think he's going to take that break, but then he's never had a break from a job in 3 months, I've said. That's like since he was playing as well. So I wouldn't be surprised if he pops up at a German club or even Germany itself after the Euros. Mm-hmm. He has said he's not going to come to the England, but he could just do a heel turn and go to Newcastle or something stupid. So you never know. Or Everton. Who knows? No, he's not that stupid. Right.
It surprised me.
Yeah.
It really surprised me when that story broke. I mean, it's because was it 8 seasons he's been there now?
It'll be 9 by the time he's finished. So this is
nine by the time he's finished.
Two more than he's ever done.
Yeah, it just didn't seem like it was on the horizon at all. I mean, you kind of become a little bit desensitized to it because, as we all know, if you play Football Manager, inevitably in especially in previous FMs, there'd be that kind of like Guardiola Klopp job swap, where like Guardiola suddenly ends up at Liverpool and Klopp ends up at City. Like, oh, that's happened again. What are the chances? But inevitably, unless that happens, he kind of stays put. So you didn't really see him leaving as something that would happen. Kev, you've kind of been through it to an extent, different sets of circumstances. Because I think it would be fair to say, sorry, Callum, that Klopp is in probably our lifetimes, probably one of the most. He's probably the best Liverpool manager of the Premier League era, especially. Mm-hmm. So that's nearly 30 odd years.
Mm-hmm.
Kev, after you Roy went Hodgson. Through it after, of course, after Roy. Like, there's no doubting it. After Roy. You've gone through it with Fergie, Kev. Yeah. Obviously, United.
Mm-hmm.
What's the scariest thing about losing somebody who kind of has officially achieved that kind of club icon status, like elite, like somebody who's turned it around, rebuilt, brought success back to a club that was previously struggling?
Simply put, everything. It's really weird. Okay, so the weirdest thing for me is that I am a 40-something-year-old bloke. And I would happily tell you that the person that has had the most biggest impact on my life that I have never met is Fergie, because of the amount of joy he brought, but the amount of, you know, ups and downs there are within the football club over a 25-year period or whatever it was with him. He is single-handedly the biggest impact on my life from anybody that I've never met, really. Mm. And it becomes a big deal. Now, the advantage that I feel that Liverpool have got over what United did at the time is that they're not losing their other chief person in their football club at the same time. We lost David Gill at exactly the same time as Fergie. And so both footballing side and business side just went completely to pot at exactly the same time. And it was very difficult. And I think what Klopp has done, which is very, very good for Liverpool moving forward, is he has been in the process of rebuilding his side over the last season or so as well. And Fergie kind of got to the point where the team that he was using was almost at its end point and it needed to be rethought and restructured. And so he moved away and other people had to do that. I think Klopp has done some of that for Liverpool. But it's so different. It's so weird. The key figurehead of your club is not there. The style of football will be slightly different, whoever it comes in and does it. The way in which Liverpool fans will feel connected to who Klopp is and how he has led that team will now be vastly different. I mean, I think Klopp is amazing in a lot of ways. When he moved to Liverpool, I was disappointed in the sense that I really wanted him at United when Van Gaal was appointed at Man United at that point. I really wanted Klopp, but he wasn't ready to move at that moment. And he went to Liverpool instead. What I have seen is I will kind of transition into maybe what Callum feels a little bit more at this point. What I feel I've seen in the last couple of years is the emergence of a slightly grumpy old man because of the stress and the strain and the pressure and all that kind of energy that he's having to put into it. It feels like he's a slightly different character than he was 8 years ago when he showed up. But I have an enormous amount of respect for who he is and what he does and how he gets his teams to play. He's been incredible. But it changes everything. And I really, really hope, even for Liverpool, who are supposed to be my arch rivals and nemesis in the world of football, I don't really go for that sort of stuff myself personally, but I even really hope for them it isn't as impactful as it was for United, because it was blooming awful for United and still is 18 years later. I'm sure that he set them up in a better way.
So that's the United City You'll Never Walk Alone FM confirmed as your new name.
Yeah. I choose to support my own team and not oppose anybody else's. You all know this, and that's the way I try and live my existence. Even Liverpool, who are sometimes a bunch of pooey heads. So there you go.
I'm the opposite. I'm the opposite.
Come on, Callum.
I'm very happy he's going. I've never liked the bloke. But I'm not. My mother always said, if you've got nothing nice to say, don't say anything at all. So that's all I'm going to say. I'm going to say nothing else. I don't like him. And I've got lots of reasons for it. Reasons that I'm not going to give on a podcast, because it's official and it's on the internet. However, the only way I can sort of identify with it as an Evertonian is David Moyes going. And I think as much as we haven't won anything in years, and it'll probably continue for the next 30 years of my life, which is great. I love supporting football teams. But David Moyes joined us at a time where we weren't very good at all, and he made us an established Premier League team, and it's never been the same since. And I do think there's an element of nowadays it doesn't happen. And I think I would be very surprised if whoever the successor of Klopp is stays at the club as long as Klopp has. And that is just the nature of football now. It's not the fact that Liverpool will change. It's just the way of the world. And managers come and go all the time. Ranieri got sacked a season after he won the Premier League with Leicester. Like, it's absolutely ridiculous. There's so many odd things about football managers. And if I'm honest with you, there's so many things I don't like about the Premier League because of that. I think the nature of lack of loyalty, but it's not just players not being loyal, it's the board not being loyal to them as well. You know, so often a manager will have a bad season and get sacked immediately. There's no sort of like, okay, you've had a bad year, but we believe in what you're doing, so we're going to keep you. It's much more often the other way. I mean, I suppose we it sort of naturally sort of segues us on to talking about managers and if we finally, after all this period of the podcast, going to talk about the game the podcast is
yeah,
about
FC. Manager mode.
I mean, something I touched upon before the podcast started was this title of being a legend at a club within Football Manager. If you're not aware, with the game you have these three sort of sections at a club. One is favoured personnel, which seems to change, come and go all the time. Like, you can get into that and then be kicked out of that, it would seem. Then there's icon, where once you're in, you're in. You're a club icon. And then the next stage on is legend. And I don't know, still to this day, having played the game for years and years and years, I don't know what the criteria is. Winning things helps. Winning things definitely helps. But I know from the saves I like doing, sort of going up through the divisions, that finishing second or going up in a playoff doesn't. That doesn't impact. So if you go from the Vanarama, whatever, north or south, to the Premier League, but you never win a league, the chances are you're going to be favoured personnel by the time you get to Premier League, which is madness. And I'm intrigued to know your three experiences with that. Have you ever been a club legend at a club? Have you not been a club legend at a club? Why do you think that is? Rich, I'm gonna knock the proverbial baton over to you.
Well, thank you for the proverbial baton. It's lovely.
No problem.
No, I think is the short answer for me. Not in recent memory, anyway. I think I've probably got up to club legend a couple of times. Oh, sorry, I've completely
icon.
Now forgotten.
Icon.
Club icon. Sorry, yes, I think I've got to club icon a couple of times, but club legend not so much. I mean, I've been having a little look through some club legends just for a couple of teams as we've been recording. I mean, if we look at Callum's Everton, for example, if you look at their list of club legends, it's mostly outfield players. It's the likes of Neville Southall, Dixie Dean, Big Duncan Ferguson.
Sorry, like, you said outfield players and then said Neville Southall. He was not out.
All right. Sorry. Not out. Sorry. Not outfield players. As in playing staff rather than backroom staff. You know what I mean? Yeah. Players rather than managers, I suppose, is the best way of putting it. I mean, if you look at Everton's list, the official list in game, David Moyes doesn't feature on it at all.
Right.
Which has really surprised me because I thought he would be there. Because as Callum says, like Moyes is in Everton terms, he's got to be, you would, in terms of Premier League era, especially, I think what he did at Everton was quite incredible. And I think it's really, his is a really interesting name because if you look at what he did at Everton and then ironically, he then moves to United, where he's not remembered particularly fondly because he was almost the sacrificial lamb, wasn't he? You know, he was like, he was the man that had to come in to replace God to most United fans' point of view. Yeah. But it's interesting that he doesn't even feature.
He never won Everton's, anything, Rich.
He didn't win anything, but his overall impact at what he did for you, he made you a significantly better team than you were when he first took over.
I agree, and I love Moyes. I think he's without a doubt for me the best manager that we've had, just from my lifetime, if you like. There's been plenty before me that I've obviously won European cups and stuff, which would easily usurp him. But in like the Premier League era, I think Moyes is the best. However, I think I'm kind of happy about the fact that he's not in Club Legends on Football Manager, because if he had that stint on Football Manager, he would not be a club legend at Everton. If he was a new gen manager, he would not be regarded as a club legend. He might not even be regarded as an icon for what he did. He got them in Europe, you know, Everton in Europe a few times. But to actually be, this is once again coming around to it, what do you have to do? What do you have to do to be a club legend?
Time and trophies, I think, isn't it? Ultimately, I guess.
You
know, it's a bit of a guess. I know for myself, for example, that I haven't reached that status in a football club in FM for a very long time, especially since I've been a content creator, because I tend to do more journeying saves as a content creator than I used to do before. I mean, to be totally honest with you, probably the first 20 years of my Football Manager or Championship Manager existence was playing as Man United, just because. And you used to spend so long there and be able to achieve so much that I probably reached it at points along the way. But I definitely haven't since I've been a content creator, very much not. I may have reached an icon here and there, possibly, but I'm not even aware of that. But I'd be really surprised if it was anything much more than just time and trophies combined that get you to where you want to be ultimately. And that becomes the tricky aspect of it. I think there should be other criteria. I think, you know, if you have started out with Slough in, what is it, like the sixth tier of English football or whatever, and you've got them to the Premier League, even if you finish second every year and not won a single trophy along the way, you should be a legend of the club. It should just be the way it is. I mean, I kind of feel like by this point I should be a legend at Fulham in the network save, because I've got them into the Champions League for the last two seasons, but I don't think I probably am, so we'll see. But yeah, I guess it's that really. But I haven't achieved that for a long time, I don't think.
I mean, I'll touch upon Slough, because last year's save, it was the first time in a long time I did achieve it. I did become a club legend in game. However, you know, I played countless seasons. I think it was about 15 seasons, but I was in the Championship. So I didn't get to the Premier League, which I think is really interesting. And that's why, once again, it causes that. I'm almost glad I did, because I think the length of time I was at the club and the progression that I saw being at that club, going from the Vanarama South to the Championship, is a massive, massive achievement. Like, if any manager did that in real life, of course they would be a club legend. But I've done saves before where I've done similar, where I've not got to the Premier League and I'm not regarded as one. And I didn't actually win that many trophies in it. I came second in a lot of divisions, or won playoffs in divisions. I think I won the FA Trophy once. I think I maybe won one or two divisions, but I didn't actually win that many trophies. So I would love, we've had Nick Madden on, but I'd love to have someone at SI actually be able to go, this is, or is it subjective? Is it different club to club? Because that would be awesome. Because that, you know, and unrealistic, if each club had sort of different philosophies, that if you hit those philosophies, that would mean you sort of move up the ranks.
I think they are there, because again, I'm looking at, again, using Everton as a great example here. Big Shaunie Dyche is a club icon at Burnley.
Everton, already.
They've already built a statue. So Shaunie Dyche is a club icon at Burnley. And in terms of his time there, he got them promoted and he consistently kept them in the Premier League. Didn't win any trophies, apart from obviously the promotion via the Championship. But he has got club icon status at Burnley. I think by that metric, if he'd stayed at Burnley and kept them up for another 3 or 4 years, I think its longevity has to be a factor. I think it has to be a factor. And in terms of expectations at Burnley, keeping them in the Premier League was always going to be the remit. I think anything more than that would have been cherry on top. But he consistently kept them in the Premier League and became a club icon. So I think the longevity is going to factor in. I mean, I'm looking at looking at Liverpool, for example. Jurgen Klopp, club legend. Well, he won a Premier League. He's won a Champions League. He's won trophies, which I think fairly establishes him. Liverpool are an odd one because Bob Paisley's there. King Kenny's there. Rafa Benitez is Liverpool favoured personnel. Mm-hmm. Like that's, and again, he did incredibly well. I think European trophy. Like that for me would bump him up. But you know, Divock Origi is a Liverpool club icon for having three good games in however many seasons. So I think there's cult impact, and it does seem to be taken into consideration in some capacity by Football Manager. I mean, kind of like, as I say, I've reached icon status. I don't think I've reached club legend status in recent memory, but very much like Kev, especially the last few FMs, I've moved around from club to club to club. I know that, for example, in my current save, and What's the Story, I'm favoured personnel at Saint-Étienne, and I got them promoted, and then I got them European football season two, and I got the Ligue 2 manager of the year. And they went, oh yeah, that'll do. He's favoured. Give it a year, I'll be gone. You can pretty much guarantee it, can't you? But I think it takes a lot. I mean, Jeb, have you ever reached the dizzying heights?
I might have done in previous FMs, but even I've gone back, looked at Pescara. So to sum up my Pescara save, let's go back to last year. Let's tell a little story. 507 games played, 261 of them won, so that's a 51% win rating. 1,002 goals scored, 600 conceded. We won Serie C, we won Serie B, we're established in Serie A. We've got into the Champions League. We've won the Europa Conference League. They've never spent more than one season in Serie A before. I'm favourite personnel with an Irish forward who scored 10 goals in 4 seasons. I've gone back. I actually, while we were doing it, I reinstalled FM22.
Because
I thought I'd go look at Elfsborg.
As you do.
Yeah, because I've still got the Elfsborg save there. So I had a look at that, and Elfsborg won back-to-back Swedish titles. I'm not in any category for that.
That's mad.
And then Bournemouth, who were took from the Championship up to the Premier League, then got them into the Champions League, then got to the Champions League semi-final. Nope, not even in favour personnel. Jason Tindall is, though. Jason Tindall's a club icon. Like that's just made me angry for the rest of the day, really, more than anything else. So yeah, it is a difficult one. Like the Pescara one is very surprising because that's 11 seasons I've spent there, and I've got no further than favoured personnel. There's a couple of like wingers that have signed that are in icons, and I think there's one player in legends, but even then it's just it's a very strange criteria, I think.
I think that's the problem, isn't it? I think it is the criteria. What is, because I think the criteria should be different for different teams. So, for example, if I took over Luton Town in this season's Premier League and I won the Premier League, I would make a strong argument that manager should be a club legend straight away. Like, because they've come in and they've won the Premier League with Luton. But if I took over at Man City and I won the Premier League, I would argue you possibly shouldn't even creep onto favoured personnel, because contextually, it's different, isn't it? Like, you've got to work against expectations and stuff like that. I think longevity has got to definitely play a part in it. I think that the Shaunie Dyche, he's got a pub outside Turf Moor named after him. Like, he is an icon at Burnley. I think he's definitely got a big part to play. What annoys me, and Jeb touched upon it there, about players that get in and you don't. And that really frustrates me, because more often than not, a striker gets in because they've scored goals and everyone loves a goal. And so they suddenly become a club icon. And you're like, hold on, I've been here 6 years longer than you. I signed you. I choose to play you every week. And yet you are the one getting all the accolades. And I'm not happy about this. There's always some random ones that sort of squeeze in. I suppose I just want it to be realistic. And that's really difficult in a game. But like, for example, if you have got a player that goes through the ranks, plays more games than any other player in the history of the club, they should 100% go into club legend, because that they have achieved that status within the club. And more often than not, they don't. And then you sign a striker, he scores 20 goals in two seasons and he becomes an icon out of nowhere. And I've always had this thing, and maybe I focus too much on it, but for some people at home, have a look on your saves, like Jeb's doing there, look through previous saves. If you've never really checked them, where did you achieve and where should you, in your eyes, have achieved?
I think there's two things going on here. I think there's an in-game thing and an IRL thing. So the IRL thing is vastly different, and that will have an impact in your game, because this time next year, when we are in FM25, there will be somebody somewhere, and it might be, for example, let's look at Real Madrid this season, IRL. Jude Bellingham is doing bits. Now, if he goes and wins the league with them and the Champions League with them in the first season that he plays, and he dominates the goals and he's absolutely incredible in every way, will he immediately go to icon status within Real Madrid after one season? Maybe, maybe not, but it's a conversation that it might be. And that's after one season. And the reason he's done it is because he's made such an impact. If I look at my own club at Man United, there will be several people potentially on the icon or the legendary list there for so many different reasons. Someone like Brian Robson didn't really win massive amounts with United until the latter part of his career, when the new generation came along. He was like 36 and just about still standing and playing. But he led the club so well, was an iconic captain, and therefore would be up on those lists, icon, legendary. Someone like Cantona came into the club and turned the club around and became a legendary figure because of what he achieved. Someone like Bobby Charlton did it because of the Munich air disaster, and he was still at the club after that and took us forward from that point. There are loads of different ways you become a legend. I'm not sure that there are loads of different ways you become a legend in game. And I think that's where it's different. So Divock Origi would be one at Liverpool, maybe, who's a legend at their club because the fans just took to him gave them a moment or whatever it might be.
Probably the most important occasions many, many times. Yeah. He scored lots against Everton.
Sure.
I came up this week, so I think Carragher was saying about Jota being the best finisher. Mm-hmm. And The Athletic did a whole article on that. What's the best finisher? Best conversion rate of any striker in the Premier League era for Liverpool. Divock Origi, 20%. So it's that way. And I'll make it easy for us to wrap up on this point. At what status do you get a personalised candle made of yourself? is that icon? Is that legend? You know?
I mean, if it's favoured personnel, there's going to be a lot of candles.
It's going to have to be a new option. They're going to have to add in for FM25. Favoured personnel, club icon, club legend, religious figurehead.
Yeah, exactly.
It's got to be up there.
That kind of sums up Klopp for me as well. That was a present for my other half from one of her best friends who has no interest in football, but she just likes Klopp because of the way he is and just like his demeanour and just like his... When he was the happy Klopp, should you say, not the moody Klopp that you sometimes see as well, but like when we're winning, basically. So
fair. Yeah.
happy Jurgen rather than angry Klopp. Two very, very different sides of the same coin. Right, just before we wrap up this segment, I'm going to take your guys' predictions on who we're going to see in the dugout at Anfield next season. Jeb, we'll start with you because you have a vested interest in this. Who do you think gets the gig?
Roy Hodgson's available at the end of the season, so let's get him back.
Perfect. Well, you've stolen my answer.
Ideally, Xabi Alonso. I think my three are Xabi Alonso, De Zerbi, or then Ange. I think Ange is a bit of a push, probably. see where Tottenham do this season, but can throw some money. Ideally, we've hopefully put some planning in, but because he told them in November, but I don't know whether or not. I can't tell.
You'd hope so. Kev, what about you, pal? Who's your new favourite for the Liverpool job?
I think you'd have to go and look at Alonso, definitely. I think that would be the first opportunity for them to go and have a proper conversation with someone. Whether Leverkusen would let that happen or not. It is Leverkusen, isn't it? Whether that would happen or not, I don't know. But the one that I'd love to see in there, just because it would be really funny to me, would be Gerrard for the sake of it. Because, you know, that would be great. But yeah, I think Xabi Alonso would be a really interesting option for them. Beyond that, I'm not sure Ange would be out of Tottenham yet. I think you might be able to get De Zerbi possibly, but there'll be other suitors for him. Of course, Xavi announced yesterday that he's stepping down from Barca as well at the end of the season.
That's because he would have got sacked because he's indeed rubbish.
I know. So that would be another one of my choices as well. Mm-hmm. So yeah, but I think Xavi Alonso is the natural choice at this moment. Although it's not based on a huge amount of data for him. He hasn't been doing it for too long, but he's been doing it very well.
Lovely. Callum, your thoughts?
Don't really care. I don't know. Give him Rafa Benitez. He knows the city, doesn't he? Get him back. He did great at Everton, so he deserves another chance in Liverpool. Sam Allardyce, he's rubbish. Who else is bad? Mick Frank McCarthy, Lampard. Is he still knocking around? Frank Lampard, he's awful. Yeah. Any ex-Everton manager, really, would fit the bill. No, I mean, it'll be Alonso, I think. I'd be surprised if it's not. It would be very interesting as well, because it tends, ex-players coming back to clubs doesn't always go very well. So I'd be intrigued to know how he gets on. Gerrard would be hilarious, because I do genuinely think he's awful. I think he is in the Lampard bracket. It's just he's got away with it because he went to the SPL instead of the Championship. So, yeah, I don't know. Don't really care. Rich, what do you reckon?
I think Gerrard would be hilarious, but I don't think it's going to happen. I controversially don't want it to be Xavi Alonso. Mainly two reasons. Firstly, I want to make this clear. I really, really like Xavi Alonso. I think he was an incredible player. And I think he's got the makings of a very, very good manager. I think what he's doing at Leverkusen this season is nothing short of incredible. And if Leverkusen win the league and Harry Kane moves to the Bundesliga with Bayern Munich and then doesn't win a trophy, I think that would be just objectively hilarious. But my counterpoint to that is it's not particularly often that somebody with the stature of a Jurgen Klopp leaves a football club and their immediate successor goes on to have the same level of success that they had. And what I wouldn't like to see is a young and exciting manager like Xavi Alonso have his career tarnished early doors, or, you know, or the appearance that it has been by an unsuccessful spell at one of the world's biggest football clubs. So I'd like to see somebody else get the gig first and then give it to Alonso in 2 or 3 years, maybe.
I think the risk with Alonso as well, that, like you said, that 2 or 3 years is Real Madrid's up in 2 or 3 years. Will he just go there? And then we have to get Alberto Aquilani, and he's the Pisa manager currently, so he could come in.
Yes. Get him in. Just checking his status. Yeah. Oh, no, he's only favoured personnel. Can you imagine, though? Yeah. I'm gonna go for one from left field because he's out of work, and it's a Champions League pedigree club. Somebody like Zidane. He's not done anything since he's left Madrid. Why not?
He didn't want to go to United because he didn't want to move to England. But I think there's other reasons why he didn't want to go to United.
I think there are other reasons. Yeah,
there are other reasons, to be honest. Yeah.
So
Mourinho's available.
He hasn't had the full English set yet, has he? So, you know, why
exactly.
Not?
Immediately re-signs James Milner and everyone's happy. What a result. There you go. So that's my shout is Zidane, left field. Come back to this podcast in 6 months' time when I'm right. And just remind everybody, or I'm really wrong. No middle ground, no surrender. Lads, I think that quite astutely brings us to the end of this week's podcast. It feels very much like it's been a podcast. How do you guys feel?
Very much so. It's been a lovely podcast. All four of us together. What a fantastic
thing. I know. It's been genuinely lovely. I've had a splendid, splendid time just having a catch up with my friends.
Let's do it again next week. Oh.
Woo-hoo!
Oh. poop. Right, before we go, lads, where can the people find you doing the things? Callum, we'll start with you, pal. Where can people find you doing things with that there slough save, what you've got going on?
He's muted
himself.
Why, Callum?
We'll never know. Jeff.
We'll never know. Why Callum on Twitch? Why Callum on YouTube? Trying to do more and more on YouTube as well. So if you are following on Twitch and you're not subscribed on YouTube, please do head over there. Yeah, that's pretty much it. We're in season 3. I'm attempting to stream when I can. It's difficult to find time, but we're season 3 and once again looking like I'm going to lose in another playoff. So if you enjoy watching me be a bit sad, then come on over and watch.
Yeah. Jeb, what about you, pal? Where can people find you doing the content?
Jebaroo.
Perfect.
Good.
That is your name. Yep. Good. Yep. Well done.
Yeah. just look that up on the internet and just click follow. It's the easiest way of doing things.
Yeah.
There you go. Kev, what about you, buddy?
I'm kind of tempted to say if people really want to come and watch me, they'll figure it out or something. I don't know, but I won't. United City FM on Twitter and Twitch is my main platforms of engagement. Come and find me every weekday afternoon. I do intend to go back to my full usual schedule this coming week, all being well. And to be totally honest, I haven't looked at my Football Manager save for quite some time and I can't remember exactly where we are. I think we're in season 2 with Colwyn Bay and having a good old time. Let's see what happens. But yeah, come and join us. What about you, Rich?
There's also rumours that Roy Keane enjoys your content.
I've heard this.
Cup of tea and Bicky. So
I know, right? I've always liked Roy.
Yeah. Roy Keane loves Jeb's content. My son hates Roy Keane.
No, mine, not Jeb's.
Oh, sorry.
He's
a big fan.
Kevsy Babe.
Yeah,
he loves Kevsy Babe. Yeah, he loves Kevsy Baby. Roy Keane doesn't like me, and because of that, my son now hates Roy Keane. So it's
true.
It's the weird circle of life. If you want to watch me doing content, twitch.tv/RichOwensFM. What's the story, former glory? We're in season 4. I'm managing Ajax. It started really badly. I've turned it around a little bit. Things are going well. Could I win the league this season? Stranger things have happened. Who knows? Ooh. Who knows? It could. It also could not. I'll be on at some point this week doing a stream. There's been talk of a network game this week as well. Jeb doesn't know this yet, but there has been talk of one. So keep your eyes posted on all of our social media for us announcing that over the next few days. Lads, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Absolutely.
Thank you all very, very much. This has been lovely. And also thank you, the audience, for consuming this podcast, whether you're listening to it, whether you're watching it, whether you're having it shouted at you by a person on the bus, however you're enjoying it, we appreciate you. Thank you very much for hanging out with all of us on another episode of Football Manager Therapy. We will see you on the next one. Take care. Love you lots. Bye-bye.